Hello, and welcome to the Preview Spotlight Interviews on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer.
And I'm Bob Brutal. In this episode, we'll be talking with creators about upcoming projects available in the current month's previews catalog.
Okay, the items we're going to be talking about with some of the creators are in the October 2008 previews. We've got a nice short episode, at least for these types of episodes, for you this time around. Joining us first up is going to be J.M. DeMatteis for the Hero Squared Love and Death miniseries.
And what we found from J.M. is that he is either J.M. DeMatteis or J.M. DeMatteis, kind of interchangeably. He doesn't mind either way. DeMatteis is the Italian pronunciation, but he has also gone by DeMatteis. So if people were ever wondering how to pronounce that name, it's either one, apparently.
I tell you, I wish some of these credit boxes had pronunciation guides at times.
It would be nice.
Next up, we're going to have Jason Henderson for the Sword of Dracula, Dracula War No. 1. That's the first part of that miniseries. And then rounding out the episode, because it's finally in previews, we're going to replay the interview we did with Zach Cruzy for Contingent No. 1, which originally aired in the Preview Spotlight interview number 10 a couple of months back. So it's in the Diamond previews, so if you haven't ordered Contingent, now's a good chance to do so. Bob and I also reviewed that on, which weekly spotlight was that? 57, maybe?
Yeah, sounds right.
So a few weeks back. So not only can you order it, you can know what we think of it already. It's good stuff, definitely worth checking out.
And, zipping through Hero Squared, obviously is going to be on page 238 of your previews from Boom Studios. Sword of Dracula, page 287, and Contingent is on page 312.
DCBS has Hero Squared and Sword of Dracula at a 45% discount and a nice 75% discount for the Contingent.
Anyone who's a DCBS customer, just check out the Contingent and see what you think about it.
Yeah. So with that, let's go to the interviews.
Okay, and we have with us J.M. DeMatteis, who has been a writer in comics and quite a popular one for a long time. And what we're going to talk to him today about is the latest and the last Hero Squared miniseries that will be coming out from Boom Studios. And in the October previews, we'll see the first issue solicited. J.M., why don't you tell us a little bit about the Hero Squared universe and about this particular arc?
Well, Keith Giffen and I, as probably most people know, we've worked together for years and years and years. We worked on Justice League. It seemed like 150,000 different Justice League stories from the late 80s into the early 90s, and then got back together again for formerly known as the Justice League. And I can't believe it's not the Justice League. And then we went over and did Defenders at Marvel, and we basically decided at a certain point that it was time for us to come up with something that was just ours and nobody else's. One of the things that used to come up in the old days with Justice League is we would like to take those characters and just twist them a little out of shape. And when you're working for a company like DC, it's inevitable that you're going to step on somebody's toes. We always had Andy Helfer there to protect us and promise them that we'd give them their characters back in a reasonable condition. But we thought it was time to just come up with something that was just ours, that we could do anything we wanted with, that no one could tell us, no, you can't do that. And so we cooked up Hero Squared, which is, let's see if I can describe it in a brief way. It takes place in the so-called real world, where we have our main character, who's a slacker named Milo in his early 20s. And long story short, one day there's a knock on the door. He opens the door, and there's a superhero standing there named Captain Valor. What we later find out is that Captain Valor comes from a parallel universe where there are superheroes, and in that world, Milo is Captain Valor. So Valor's universe has been pretty much destroyed by the villain named Caligonus. So Valor comes to this universe looking for his doppelganger here, hoping that this Valor will help him because he knows Caligonus is on the way and she's going to destroy this world as well. But, of course, here there are no superheroes, and Milo is nothing but basically sort of a Woody Allen schlub. And and it's, the story is really about the relationship between these two characters, a regular yo-yo from the regular world and this superhero counterpart from another world. And then the extra twist we have on there is that Milo has a girlfriend named Steffi, and when our supervillain Caligonus shows up from that world, we discover that Steffi from the parallel universe is Caligonus. So we've got sort of a romantic quadrangle going on because, Milo becomes infatuated with Caligonus. It endangers his relationship with Steffi. Valor falls in love with Steffi. So it's a buddy comedy. It's a romantic comedy. It's a superhero action story. It's a lot of different things. And I think it's frankly the best thing Keith and I have ever done together.
Well, certainly I think it's stuff that anyone who enjoyed your work on the old Justice League stuff, I mean, if they're not reading this, they really should be. Because it's the same comedic take, but you're right. You've done some things here that you just simply couldn't do with the DC characters.
Yeah. And by dropping Valor into a world that is more like our own, allows us to really take that step back and really comment on the whole genre and the inherent absurdity and danger in the whole superhero mindset. So although the story is got a lot of laughs, and it definitely has a sort of a comedy flavor to it, there's a lot of serious undercurrents too, and the characters go through their paces. And Keith and I really enjoy flipping those things around. People, you know, they're reading for 18 pages and they're laughing, and then suddenly hit them in the face with something really, really serious or deeply moving. Because my favorite comedy shows on television over the years have been shows like MASH or All in the Family, and more recently something like Scrubs, a show that can have you laughing out loud one second and really turn around and touch you in the next moment. And Keith and I like to keep that in the mix, too. So it's a lot of blah-ha-ha, but there's also some heart and soul in it as well.
Now, Keith isn't listed in the credits in previews for this. How involved is he with this miniseries?
No, Keith is very much involved in this. I'm sort of shouldering a larger part of the load, but it's definitely a Giffen and DeMatteis production.
Okay, cool.
We're working on it very much so.
Good to hear. Now, it's also billed as the 3-issue finale for Hero Squared. Tell us a little bit about kind of the decision to end the saga.
Well, you know, it's one of the things that came up for us was the fact that bringing this superhero character into the real world set in motion events in that real world. And as the story evolved, as the characters evolved, as we saw where we could take Captain Valor, we realized that there was an end point coming up. You know, it was almost the story making the decision more than we made the decision, that these characters had to reach a final point. We couldn't keep having Captain Valor running around and causing huge property damage in Manhattan and then go back to, you know, some sitcom situation in the next issue. Things really started to rocket along story-wise, and if anyone wants to go out and pick up, there are two trade paperback volumes of Hero Squared out now where you can catch up on the whole story that leads up to this moment. And so it really is a character-based thing, and as the characters moved and evolved, we saw we had to really bring them to an end point. And so we made the decision to, why not? Let's do something that people don't do that often, which is let's just wrap this thing up and wrap it up in a satisfying way. So that's what this miniseries called Love and Death is going to do.
Cool.
And that's refreshing because, you know, getting, especially on a creator-owned work like this, getting a beginning, middle, and ending of the story is nice to have, especially since, you know, I'm hoping and I imagine that you'll do this when it's done is – you know, one big omnibus and just get like the whole Hero Squared story, boom.
Yeah, we would love to do
under
that.
One cover.
Yeah, then it would be really a big, fat, self-contained graphic novel, and that would make me very happy, yeah.
I also like the take that you have on it here with the interplay between Milo and Captain Valor from the different worlds. This is not a concept where if it has been done, that it's been so done to death that multiple instances of this come to mind of where that is. So it is kind of a fresh take, and I have enjoyed the interplay between the characters and seeing how that go. And as you said, the love triangle kind of thing between Milo and Steffi and their superpowered counterparts being enemies, that was another interesting take and just quite nice how that played out.
Yeah, it's allowed us to go off in a lot of different directions, and the fun for us, if you look back at our Justice League stuff, I mean, Keith and I both think the best stories that we've ever done together are the stories where, quote, nothing happens. You know, I always say that we were Seinfeld before Seinfeld came along, you know,
mm-hmm.
Stories about nothing. that at least are apparently about nothing, but really are just about character. You know, the old Justice League stories where they were just sitting around at their headquarters and stuff happened in the course of just a normal day. It wasn't about superhero, supervillain battles or anything like that. And it's very much the same thing with Hero Squared. I mean, we have those big beat moments that come along with the big action scenes. But I think my favorite story that we've done so far, which I think is in the second trade collection, and I think is actually the absolute best story Keith and I've ever done together. The whole issue is Milo and Captain Valor go to the therapist, and it's 22 pages of these guys working through their stuff with their therapist, you know, and it's great. And I totally love that story. And that's the kind of stuff that we like to do. It's very, very character based first and foremost. And, you know, if you want to see a guy in cape and a tights flying around doing that stuff, you'll get that stuff there, but that's not the meat of what this series is about. It's really about these characters interacting with each other. And it gets all kinds of emotional complications, and that's the fun. In fact, in this miniseries, there's a bit where we go back to the therapist's office, and now it's all four of them. It's Milo, it's Steffi, it's Valor, and it's Caligonus, all trying to work out this stuff that's been going on now with Milo, with Valor, and Caligonus has been going on for years, you know. So I love that stuff, you know. If you look at the comic, you see how much dialogue is on a page. I don't think I've ever, and I'm certainly known for running off at the mouth, ever had so much dialogue in stories as the words that we've stuffed into the mouths of these characters. You know, it kind of reminds me of the old 30s screwball comedies where there was a lot of dialogue that was flying back and forth really, really fast, and that's sort of the feeling that we aim for with these stories.
Well, and I think you hit it, because while there's a lot of dialogue, it doesn't feel wordy. It's certainly not exposition or something that drags
right
down the story. It actually, in a bizarre way, really speeds it up and plays very well on that.
You know, that's exactly right, because also if you watch those old movies, it's the same thing. They're talking constantly, but there's a real rhythm and there's a real pace, and writing this kind of dialogue really requires that. There has to be a certain pace to it. It has to read a certain way. It's not the same as if the whole page was stuffed with captions explaining things. That's not what it's about. It's really the rhythm and the interplay, you know, between the characters. That's a very smart thing you just said. So pat yourself on the back.
Cool. Well, and do the same, because I think you guys are doing some great work here on Hero Squared, and, you know, it's going to be cool to get a nice conclusion to the story, but I'll admit I'm also a little upset that it may be the, you know, actual conclusion. We may not get more of this later, because I think this is one of the hidden gems out there.
Yeah, I thank you for saying that. And, you know, the truth is, you never know. This is the end, you know. At the same time, there's always doorways to other stories. Maybe they're from the past. Maybe they're from the side, because there are lots and lots of parallel universes out there. One of the things that comes up in this story has to do with many different Valors from many different parallel universes showing up, and I don't want to say much more than that. But so there are lots and lots of doorways. There are lots of openings if in a couple of years we decide, hey, you know, let's do one more. And there's also, you know, Keith and I a couple of years ago did a spinoff with something called the Planetary Brigade, which was the backstory of Captain Valor and sort of his Justice League team. So those characters are out there. So there's a whole universe out there for us to explore. But this story, for real, for sure, this is a really complete and solid ending. And you'll see when you get to the third issue that it really is the end, and there's no way to go back to the status quo after this. So hopefully we'll be able to achieve both, you know, really, really end the story. And yet if we want to explore that universe in the future, there'll be doorways open to do that.
Yeah, it'd be the best of both worlds. So,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
Glad to hear that.
Oh, my.
Well, and again, everybody who's listening who has enjoyed any of your Justice League work really needs to check this out. And again, the Planetary Brigade and the two trades for Heroes Squared. This is great stuff along those same lines, but I think, again, ratcheted up kind of a notch. So,
and one other thing that I, just for our listeners, we say this every month, but I'll continue saying it every month. If this sounds like something that you're interested in and it sounds like something you want to read, go to your local shop now. It's in this month's previews, and tell your shop owner that you're interested in buying this book so he orders it. Unfortunately, we always say, you know, Boom Studios, they do great stuff, but I go to a lot of different comic shops, and over half the comic shops I go into, there's not a Boom book to be found anywhere in the shop. And it's just the smaller publishers, a lot of the shops, and it might be your shop, don't just order these things for the rack. They might order them for someone to put on their pull list, but they're not guaranteed going to be in the shop. So if you want to read this, now is the time. Go to your shop, get your shop owner to put an order into previews into Diamond for this so that you make sure that this is going to be there. And the other hope is if your shop owner hears a couple of people come in and saying, wow, I'm really interested in this Hero Squared book that's coming out, maybe they'll get the one for you and they'll get another one for the rack. And that's what we really want to have seen.
12 or 15. Or 15.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's really true. There's so much, forgetting just Hero Squared, there's so much great material out there that has to try to squeeze through into the mainstream, you know, and Boom has a whole line of really interesting stuff, as do many other companies. And I'm working with a new company called Arden Entertainment, which just put out a new version of Flash Gordon that just came out. And it's hard. It's hard with Marvel and DC putting out so much material and dominating the market in the way that they do for the indies to make a crack in that wall, you know. I want to say one more thing regarding Hero Squared, and I have to be really, really vague about this, but there's something big happening with Hero Squared. I can't really say exactly what. Let's just say it involves other media that I think will also be putting this book on the map in a much bigger way in the coming months. So get in on it now.
Yeah.
before your underoos and the action figures come your way, you know?
Cool. That's good to hear. I was as vague as that may be. So you heard the announcement.
You heard the non-announcement first.
Yeah.
And hopefully in the next month or so there'll be something more concrete that we'll be able to talk about and let people know what's going on. But it's something really exciting happening with Hero Squared.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good to hear. And definitely, like Bob was saying, if you guys want this, pre-order it. I've got an excellent comic store here in town. That's very indie-friendly, and the last couple of times Bob recommended a couple of Boom titles to me, I had a hard time finding them there. And again, this is a really good store for stocking independent titles, so if you want it, you pretty much have to pre-order it to guarantee that you'll get it.
And I know that I'm pretty sure Boom has the trades on their website, if you want to buy it from the Boom website, and I know that Amazon has them. So if you can't find them, if you're banging on the doors of your local comic shop and you can't find them, you can always find them online.
Yeah. Cool. And look in the show notes. We'll put links to those in the show notes for this episode. So if you're interested in finding some of the past Hero Squared, just check the show notes for this MP3 that you just got, if you got it off of iTunes or on our website, and we'll have some links for you there on purchasing Hero Squared.
Well, thank you for joining us, and best of luck with Hero Squared.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
And we have with us today Jason Henderson, one of the creators of the Sword of Dracula series. And
yes.
The latest Sword of Dracula entry is called The Dracula War, and it's going to be in the December previews.
Yep.
And we have Jason here to talk to us about that series, and we'll also talk a little bit about the history of the Sword of Dracula, because there have been some previous entries. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Thank you very much. I'm so excited to be here.
Give us a little bit about the history, but also kind of bring us into the Dracula War and what it's all about and the title characters.
Okay. Starting with the Dracula War and working back slightly, Sword of Dracula, The Dracula War is a 3-issue miniseries from Digital Webbing with art by Greg Scott, who a lot of you may know from Gotham Central, and he's working on Galveston now and a lot of stuff. But he does this really, really realistic art. And what this book is about is what happens when Dracula, the most powerful terrorist in the world and the king of all vampires, takes over the Denver International Airport after spies blow up one of his reservoirs of blood. So you have a bunch of commandos led by a woman named Ronnie Van Helsing who blow up one of Dracula's many reservoirs where he keeps blood, because he needs blood not just for sustenance but also to power his many weapons and materiel. And they blow one of these things up, and then the next morning, in apparent retaliation, Ronnie wakes up and Dracula has seized the Denver International Airport overnight. So thousands of people are dead. There are soon zombies wandering the grounds, and Dracula's holed up in the tower. And that's the scenario. What do you do with that? How do they manage to uproot him without having to nuke the entire base? The universe is very like that. I mean, if I were to describe what is Sword of Dracula, Sword of Dracula is Black Hawk Dracula. It is a reimagining of Stoker's character in a sort of a very action-oriented universe where we imagine this is not going to be a romantic Dracula. It's not going to be a business suit drawing room kind of Dracula. This is going to be a Dracula who is the king from Wallachia, still alive with all the powers that he had in the book, and his powers have gotten stronger. And he's every bit as cruel and mean and smart as that guy would be if he were alive today. And so the first miniseries, to bring you back to where we've been before, in the first miniseries, we kind of introduced that whole concept and introduced, the people who were fighting against him. And, that went on for a while, and now we're back with an entirely new scenario. And we hope to bring some new people in.
Cool. It sounds like a lot of fun.
By fun, we talk about thousands of dead people at an airport. But
hey, I've been to airports, right. So I'm okay with that.
I've been to Denver International Airport quite frequently, so I can understand the frustration.
I've seen
how much. You raise a really valid question, about how can this stuff be fun? How can you? Because people have actually asked me, that they'll say, how can you make comic book like G.I. Joe kind of materials out of the concept of the War on Terror? How can you joke about the War on Terror by making the terrorist vampires? How can you call Dracula the Osama bin Laden of vampires? And in other words, how can you commercialize, violence and war? And there's so many responses to that, my head spins. But one is that, what is G.I. Joe if not the commercialization of war? We do have opportunities to make statements about the world in these books, but essentially, I think this is how we work through our fears, is by having a lot of fun with these concepts.
Well, yeah, and it seems like what you're doing is taking Dracula and contextualizing him in a modern setting, and that would be a war on terror.
Absolutely. Although, the funny thing, I think Bruce Wright, who's a Texas writer, in fact, wrote a book called Nightwalkers, suggested that Dracula was our world's most enduring Rorschach blot. Because, to be honest, you can use him for almost anything. He's almost as durable as Batman. You can use him for anything. So I could do Gone with the Wind and put Dracula in the Rhett role if I wanted to write that. In my case, I wasn't remotely interested in a romantic Dracula. And so we've got Dracula the bad guy. But you can reinterpret it many ways. Another thought there is that, you just said putting Dracula in the modern context. Just think about it. If you gave that assignment to like five good writers, you'd wind up with five different, probably pretty good concepts. You'd wind up with Dracula as president in at least one of them. And you'd wind up with Dracula as lover and Dracula as sadist. Dracula as, one would almost always be Dracula as a symbol for pestilence or AIDS. There's this ability to take this character, which was always about invasion and about seduction, and use it for whatever cause you want. But in the sort of Dracula universe, the thing that distinguishes is always going to be the mechanics. The fact that, we're about geopolitics and the War on Terror, but it's going to be told through rolling tanks and chunky missiles and fistfights that take place on the top of trains. No kidding.
So you've gone with the convention, which is a good one. I mean, you have Dracula as a bad guy, because sometimes the reinterpretation, you have this kind of romantic Dracula, which sort of the reader's going to sympathize. Well, you have Dracula as kind of a scumbag terrorist, so you're not going to really sympathize with him. So you have the Ronnie Van Helsing character that the reader can sympathize with. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that character?
Ronnie Van Helsing is I really love Ronnie, and what was funny is when we started the series back in 2003. People immediately, once we were in print, because that issue went for six issues, that series did, once we were in print, people started sending me pinups of Ronnie, and teenage girls would join the forums because they were very interested in her, because we would drop hints about the fact that her name is Ronnie Van Helsing. She is probably, around 30 years old. She is the commanding, you know, she's sort of the ground command officer for this organization called the Polidorium, which is named after Dr. John Polidori. And it is, you know, theoretically a UN-based group that in the United States operates near Denver, Colorado. And she has joined them as a leader and immediately turned much of the Polidorium's resources to tracking down Dracula, because she, her family, like given her family name, is, she's very interested in that. But, you know, she has all kinds of problems. She is, you know, she's belittled by, you know, the, her sisters. She has a whole, she has a sort of large brood. And we started sprinkling in little bits of her backstory, you know, like the arguments between her little sister, the arguments between her big sister, the arguments with her brother, who's now, you know, locked away in a, in, as a monk somewhere. And she struggles with an eating disorder. So, I, you know, she's this very real person. And we even, you know, the way we wanted to put it is that we didn't want Ronnie to be a camouflaged male. You know, we didn't want her to be a sort of cliched, neither a sexpot who's always like, you know, making poses and putting her hands on people, but also not a, not a, a sort of camouflaged grunt from G.I. Joe, you know, just happens to be female, but is always yelling military thing. You know, we wanted this to be a real person, you know, and so I patterned her after several very strong women, you know, that I knew. My best friend in grad school was a pilot in the Air Force, and her attitude and her way of being was, you know, perfect as a model for Ronnie. That woman is also actually, her name was Anne Armstrong, and she's actually also the model for the character Anne Armstrong, who is the leader of the Polidorium in the Sword of Dracula. I think Anne would be shocked to know all of this, but so. Anyway, Ronnie Van Helsing wound up being the star of the whole Sword of Dracula series, and people started kind of fixating on her even more than on Dracula. So.
Well, again, it makes sense because, you know, you want to vote or root for the person who's going to win. And, you know, if, right. If Dracula's the bad guy, you know.
He's the bad guy here. And people forget what a bad guy, by the way. I mean, you know, if you go back and look at the original book, Dracula's a very, very bad man. I mean, you have in the – I've written an essay on this. So if you go get the trade paperback, the Sword of Dracula trade paperback, which I think you can still order through Diamond, and I get it through Amazon periodically whenever I run out, I have this essay in the back called What I Forgot About Dracula, because so much of what we know about Dracula is tainted by what we remember of the movies. And most of what we remember the movies is especially tainted by the Matheson script from the 1970s that starred Jack Palance. And that had a heavy, heavy influence on the Coppola Dracula that came around in 1992. And people remember that one extraordinarily well. And in both of those, you have this motif where Dracula does the many bad things he does because he is looking down through the centuries for a reincarnation of his lost love. So you have essentially Dracula, the wounded victim, acting out. And I was like, well, that's, you know, that has no justification in the novel at all. It's a great idea, and I understand why Matheson wrote it that way. But, and then I understand why Coppola adopted it, because his was a romantic Dracula. But that is not based in the literature. That's just this idea that came around from you know, the author of The Omega Man. And, you know, so if you look at the Dracula in the novel, he does say to Mina, for instance, that, you know, she'll be a beloved one, but there's no indication that she'll be, you know, a monogamous beloved one, or that is particularly meaningful, because it's clear that Dracula cannot love. He's so damaged that he, you know, to use a modern term, you know, he's only going to hurt. He only can hurt. He's six, you know, if I recall, this woman is whining at him and he tosses a baby to the wolves in the original book. He's a bad, bad man. And if you look at him historically, if we assume, and it's not a done deal, but if we assume that the Dracula in the book, the Stoker book, is in fact also the historical Dracula, then we also have to assume that the Dracula in the book was the one who committed all the war crimes and atrocities of the actual historical Dracula. And that includes things that I really can't describe on the radio. I mean,
yeah,
very appalling crimes.
Yeah, I know about those.
Right. I think I'm okay not knowing about those. Yeah.
I've actually read a lot of that stuff. You know, I've read the original Stoker novel, and I know exactly what you're talking about, and I also know about the historical Dracula, Vlad.
So if you took that guy, you took the guy from the book, and he didn't die, and he was now nearly 400 years old. And so what we decided, well, what would happen with his powers? Because Van Helsing decided, you know, said in chapter 18 of Dracula that Dracula's growing, that his powers are getting stronger. The lizard mind of Dracula is attracting power. And so I said, well, by this century, he should be able to control blood completely. So we have a Dracula who can stand close to you, and if you're bleeding, he can rip all the blood out of your body. You know, and he can take the blood and turn it into, you know, a sword, or if he had enough of it, and if he had a reservoir of it, he could build an entire castle out of it. So you have a Dracula who has a blood power that is essentially, you know, the way Hal Jordan uses a power ring, Dracula can do that with blood.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So, you know, I can understand why in some of the movies they romanticize Dracula, because you've got, you know, 90 minutes to 2 hours, and kind of same thing, you need to have someone to empathize with. So if you make Dracula kind of a tragic anti-hero kind of thing that's got some kind of redeeming qualities, then you don't need to build up an alternate Van Helsing type of character, you know, to have the viewer be able to identify with, you know.
Right. Who is the target for the viewer? Who is the viewer supposed to be imagining that they are? And you're right. In the movies, in the movies, I'd say post Jack Palance, post the 1970s.
Yeah.
Then, you know, basically, you're supposed to put your mind into Dracula and into whoever his main sort of lover is, and then the Van Helsing character is supposed to be sort of a weenie that you're just going to be irritated by, you know.
Right.
And that has continued, and I understand why, because when you think about it, you do these things because it makes for a more kind of an interesting script, and you say to yourself, but it doesn't have to be so, because if you look at you know, when I first wrote the original pitch for Sword of Dracula, the whole idea was, how do you make an ultimate hammer? You know, how do you take the Dracula that Christopher Lee played and the Van Helsing that Peter Cushing played, and kind of bring that into a much more exciting, you know, nonstop action, but nevertheless, you know, do it like that, where Dracula is strong and powerful, but if you're attracted to him, you know, that's a problem with you that you can deal with, because he's a sadist and you know, and he's attractive for reasons that make humanity troublesome. And that, you know, Peter Cushing as Van Helsing is the pure and right. And so if there are problems with him, there are problems with him, but this is the guy that you're supposed to be following. Now, you know, it gets complicated because obviously, you know, if you spend time with a character, after a while, he becomes slightly likable. One thing that Ronnie does, and she does another slideshow in Dracula War, is because she gives slideshows about Dracula in case you don't know anything about him. She has to there's a scene in the first issue where she has to brief the Pentagon on what is Dracula. And so she does a whole slideshow, and she's like, you know, this is a guy, you know, this is a guy who would impale people and he would do this and that. And I'm excited by that. We did the first slideshow scene in Sword of Dracula 2 back in the day. So, you know, we're gonna do that one again.
Oh, very good. So coming in December, go to your shop if you want to get this book, if this has sounded interesting at all to you. You want to pick it up at the shop. Now, in order to do that, your shop is going to need to order them. This is why we're talking to you now, because it's in the previews that is in your hands now or is in your shop right now, and your shop is putting in their orders right now for December books. Tell your shop you want to buy this so they'll order some for you. Otherwise, December is going to roll around. You're going to go to the shop, and chances are, most shops I've seen, you're not going to find a copy on the rack. So go to your shop, tell them, Sword of Dracula, Dracula War, looks cool, order a couple copies. Put it on your pull list if it sounds like that. Encourage your shop to order a couple extra for the rack.
And if you guys have questions about the Dracula War or about vampires or Dracula in general or anything, really, come to the Dracula War. I mean, come to swordofdracula.com, go to our forum. I hang out there. I answer questions, and you know, it can be a really fun conversation. So thank you very much.
And thank you for joining us. Very interesting conversation, and looking forward to Dracula War coming out in December.
All right. Thank you very much. I'll talk to you guys soon.
And we've got with us now Zach Cruz, who works for Discount Comic Book Service and is also a contributor on the comic book page forums. But he's also now, you're a writer, correct, Zach?
Yep, that's correct.
For a comic book called The Contingent. And this is coming out, and while Zach is in some negotiations with Diamond to get it out through Diamond to reach a wider audience a few months down the line, is available right now from DCBS on their August order form at a very aggressive discount, very nice price, I think 75% off, so it's about 87 cents. I can't pass up. I would have bought it at full price, but... hey, 87 cents, I'm definitely not going to pass it up. Tell us a little bit about Contingent, Zach. Tell us what the story is, and if you like X, you would like Contingent.
Well, the basic story is about a kid named Miguel who is born and raised in Bolivia, and he is basically forced from his home by a school that is recruiting superpowered people. And so he comes to America, you know, not necessarily by his own will, but he feels like he has, you know, little choice in the matter. So he gets there, and once he gets there, he finds out that the school's not all it's cracked up to be, and there's a lot more going on with it than most people understand. And then later on in the story, we find out that he's really important to the whole thing, and he's trying to, it's sort of a mystery for him. He's trying to figure out, you know, exactly why he's so important and what exactly the school's goals are and what they're trying to do. It's really hard for me to compare it to another book. I think fans of books like Rising Stars may like it. If you're a fan of teen books, you'll definitely like it. Those types of things, I think it'll appeal most to the fans of those books. But another thing is, a big influence for me on the book is Steve Ditko's work. And, of course, you know, not that he did a lot of teen books, but the types of characters that he built and the types of people that his characters were a huge, just massive influence on me. So if you're a fan of Ditko's work, especially the stuff that he did for Charlton and some of his independent stuff, then I definitely think you'll like the book.
So this is played straight, though, right? Unlike some of the other School for Superheroes books like PS-238 or Necessary Evil that have kind of a humor element to them. This is... got the dark undertone of what's this organization doing, and it's not got any comedic elements. My understanding is correct.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah, it's I try to throw, you know, little wisecracks in there here and there when I can, but when it comes to the school, everything is completely straight, and when it comes to Miguel, everything is completely straight. Now there's some elements in the story that especially pop up in later issues that where I try to, you know, infuse a little bit more like big superhero fun. But it may be a wisecrack here and there, but by and large, it's absolutely a straight book. It's a very serious tone to it.
Yeah, well, that's like Spider-Man or something, right? You know, I mean, he does wisecracks, but I wouldn't call that a comedy book, right?
Right.
Whereas, you know, you get something like Deadpool, and he does wisecracks, and that's definitely kind of a comedy kind of a book, right? So that's different. You have like the serious tone book that's got, you know, kind of wisecracking in it, but it's not really comedic. And then you have like kind of the straight, you know, this has got superpowers, but it's pretty much a comedy slanted book.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely a straight book.
Now, how many issues is this going to run for?
Hopefully for quite a while. We're absolutely for sure doing six. And then so long as we can make the first six successful, then we're going to do at least six more. And we've plotted out pretty far ahead. We've plotted out like 48 to 50 issues.
Wow.
So depending on how successful we can make it, you know, in terms of our goals, then we'll keep it going, you know, as long as we can.
So you'd like for this to be an ongoing?
I would love for it to be an ongoing. I'm telling you, I've had a lot of fun just putting everything together and getting, you know, building the characters and creating situations for them to interact in. And, yeah, I really like it to keep going. But
that's cool, because so many creators these days seem to be aiming for that 3 to 6 issue miniseries and really have no solid plans after that. Some would like to see it go further, some really don't care, whatever. So to hear somebody like yourself say that, you know, you'd like to go for the 40, 50 or more run, I think is great.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's something that, you know, Cameron Merkler, you know, the owner of the store, you know, he's sort of a creative partner on the book with me, and, you know, we're both really passionate about it, and we just want to, you know, tell the best story we can and for as long as we can. So.
Now, that's cool.
Now, tell us about the artist on the book.
The artist's name is Zeu, and he is from Portugal, and I hooked up with him through the digital webbing forum that they have there. Sort of like, what do you call that, like a classified section there. And we posted an ad, and we posted the ad twice just to make sure we got, you know, all the applicants we could get. We ended up getting like 60 to 70 applicants, and we just skimmed through all the work and really, really liked the stuff that he had sent us, and we went with him. And I'm actually really, really pleased with all the work he's done. He's done a really great job, and he's done a few other books as well. He has an issue of Phantom that was just solicited in July, Phantom 26. He did the art for that. And he's done quite a bit of work for the Phantom and Moonstone. And he also did another book a while back with Jimmy Palmiotti at Image called Cloudburst. So he's been around for a little while and doing work in the industry. But yeah, it was just chance that we happened to hook up with him, and it's worked out great.
Perfect. And you also told me, I believe, that there's some sample pages of this up on the DCBS First Light site.
Right, there are. There are 3 sample pages from the first issue up on the First Light section, as well as character breakdowns for the characters who have appeared so far or will appear within the second issue. And then more character breakdowns will come as we get deeper into the book. But, yeah, that's all in the First Light section. There's a story synopsis, like I said, character breakdowns, as well as the 3-page sample from issue 1.
Yeah, that's great. Now, we'll put a link to it in our show notes here. I just want to, you know, add in the DCBS First Light section is really cool because Cameron goes out of his way to, you know, put up art from a lot of different books, so you can kind of try before you buy, especially if it's an indie book that you're not really sure and you just see the little tiny solicit in previews, being able to go up there and any of the DCBS pages, even if you're not a DCBS customer, you can go out to their site. You know, it's not, you don't have to log in as a customer only or anything. Click on the First Light icon over on the left-hand side of the page, and you can browse through a lot of different things out there and see lots of different comics and find something that you like. You can, you know, order it from your local shop, order it from whoever. But it's really about seeing what breadth of comics are out there and finding stuff that you'll like. You know, so taking a look at things like Contingent, I think it's really great that we have an opportunity, you know, the internet. Well, you know, this podcast wouldn't be on if there wasn't internet, but, you know, me being able to go and look at pages of art and just having any of this stuff at my fingertips. I'll often do searches around when I'm looking at an issue of previews because, you know, a lot of times the ad is so small, but, you know, a couple of searches away, I can usually find sample pages and, other information about a book, which is just fabulous.
Yeah, it's a really nice program, and there's 2 or 3 more phases that I know that are in the works for it that will improve what's already there. So hopefully it gets a lot of people not just to look at, you know, at the Contingent, my book, but to look at a lot of different indie books, you know, because I mean, it's really, I know people harp on it all the time, but it is really important that people do check out indie stuff and give it a shot, because those are the guys, you know, that are going to be, you know, the next big thing or have the potential to be. I mean, all the great writers we have now all have indie roots. You know, the Bendises, the Matt Fractions, the Ed Brubakers. I mean, they all got their start in indie books. So
yeah,
you never know who you may stumble upon.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, I first read Bendis. I forget whether the first thing I read from him was Jinx or it might have been Torso. But, you know, that was definite indie stuff, you know, going on back then. And it was like really indie. And, you know, he was very talented as a writer even back then. And you just didn't see, you know, if he hadn't have been doing that indie stuff, Marvel would not have picked him up.
Oh, no.
You know? I love seeing the talent that's out there. There's so many good things. You know, not everything's to everybody's taste, but you look around, check it out on the internet, especially when you have an opportunity to see some sample pages. And if something, you know, you see it and it's like, wow, that looks pretty cool, support it.
Yep. Yeah. It's a fun program to at least see grow. So.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, Zach. And my understanding is that the contingent has also been you've got copies of that printed and around, right?
That's correct. So basically, once orders are placed, it'll fill right away.
Right. So I ordered it, and you're going to put it in my next week's box.
Wow, that is fast.
From DCBS. So, well, you know, I have weekly shipping, but people who have monthly shipping, you know, if you order it, you'd get it at the end of August, you know, but you certainly won't have to wait 2 or 3 months to see it coming out. So I'm looking forward to reading it, and we'll let you know what we think when we read. I mean, I looked at the sample pages, and the sample pages look really good. So I'm looking forward to reading the entire first issue.
Well, thanks a lot, guys.
Same here. Go ahead.
Thanks a lot.
Cool. Well, best of luck with it, and hopefully it'll be a big success, and we can have you back on for, you know, issue 50 or whatever down the line.
Yeah, I hope so.
The special anniversary issue.
Yeah, the big double size with the foil print. And
a very special issue. Miguel does a Lifetime movie or something.
Yeah. He meets Meredith Baxter Burney.
Of course. Cool.
All right, well, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate you having me on, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.